Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dice Guys, episode number 15 for January 21st, 2012. It's the end of the world this year.
Supposedly.
Hey, why am I doing this? Maybe you should do the intro.
No, that's your job.
Why is it my job?
Because.
That's not a good answer.
It's the only answer I've got right now.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
You need to do it sometime, though. It's great. You'll love it.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to welcome, since I'm doing this intro, all 20 of our fans from Google Plus.
Woohoo!
Yeah, actually, there's probably 16 because I think four of them are us and family. So
quite all right. Quite all right. It doesn't seem like a big number, but to us, it is a sign of growth, and we're very happy that people are enjoying what we do.
Yep, and we want you to tell us what you like and what you don't like, and we might even listen to you. So
yeah, because if you want to see some change, stick around. This will definitely change.
Yeah, in fact, we got some change on tap for today.
Because, absolutely.
Instead of board games, we have our board game pick of the week.
Right.
But instead of talking about board games, we're going to talk about role-playing games. It's actually a role-playing game, which we can't mention.
Right, because of recent things in the news that people may have been paying attention to, we now have to be afraid that we might be copyright infringing if we mention the name of this company and get our site shut down without any due prosecution.
That's right. So we won't be mentioning the game. You'll have to figure out what the game is on your own.
Don't worry. We'll mention the game.
Fight the power.
We can't stick with it that long, but we've made our point already, so you know.
And of course, we've got our brain flakes, which are always crunchy in milk. I don't know how brains are crunchy,
some mysterious power,
but they are. And I'm forgetting something. What am I forgetting? Ah, theme song.
No, oh, man. Trying to kill me.
So, Jason, here we are after another little hiatus kind of thing.
Strange
it's a couple
how that
weeks.
Happens. Yeah. Various illnesses, injuries, such and so forth keep pushing us back, but we think we're on the mend and things should be on track now.
That's what we
Well, we're
saying.
Making plans for it at least.
We keep thinking this.
Fingers crossed, folks.
But you don't want to hear about old man ailments.
No, no. So. That's what you have your strange cousin to call you and talk to you about.
Or that friend that's out there, you know, that... Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
Oh, what else is going on, Jason?
Not a hell of a lot. Yeah, well, things to discuss about politics, but we're not doing that here.
No, we don't do politics on this podcast.
I cannot, therefore, explain to you why I am an incredibly angry person lately. You guys will just have to deal with the attitude.
I have to deal with the attitude, and it gets me all angry. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a
you know,
fun
something,
little thing.
Something's got me angry lately.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to do with politics.
Awesome. What's that? Well, not awesome.
Dublin Dr. Pepper
is
being canceled or stopped or whatever.
Okay. Now, I know there's something behind this that probably makes a lot of sense from a business point of view, some kind of license infringing or something like that, and pretty much...
Distribution license. Yeah.
I mean, pretty much it had to be done from a business point of view. I understand all that. But what ultimately it means is that in the next month or so, these are no longer going to be available to us.
In America.
And this pisses us off.
It does, because Dublin Dr. Pepper is the most awesome Dr. Pepper out there.
Pure cane sugar Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
Of a recipe that is...
I think closer to the original.
Closer to the original. It's delicious.
It is. It's amazing. And now we won't be able to get it here because of licensing restrictions and everything. So, you know, but, you know, I've got a secret stash and I'm buying from it so no one else can get it.
Yeah. Keep your dream alive, Mike.
Other than that, nothing else is really going on. Okay. You know, just the same old, and everything.
We have a couple of things to talk about for this week, but really, it's been pretty uneventful.
Been pretty uneventful life-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's go on then to Brain Flakes. So, let's see. Let's start the Brain Flakes with something that might make some people irate.
Oh, yay. That's what we like. Piss off our fans.
Let's go. This is about Apple, and Apple is always a polarizing business for some reason.
I don't understand the haters, but whatever. Yeah. Anyway, let's go.
But we're going to talk about it because basically this week they announced the new iBooks 2, and they announced an education initiative to get textbooks at a relatively cheap price, $15 or less, onto the iBooks in a format that's not just a textbook dumped on a screen.
Right.
So these are interactive textbooks with 3D models and video and charts and stuff. It ties into their presentation software, so you can make full presentation type things with interactive buttons and all, and just bring them right into your book. So you get interactive charts and diagrams. It's pretty nice looking stuff. And of course, it only works on iBooks. So that's one thing that people are trying to say, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Apple's taking going out on a limb. Apple's going out talking to these publishers and getting them on board. Amazon could have done this. It's got big power in the book industry, but it hasn't done it. Why not? Who knows? But Apple does these things. And they go out on a limb and they try this stuff. And sometimes it fails and sometimes it succeeds. And I think this is a pretty good thing. The main reason I bring it up is because the tool to make these books is free.
Right.
They're giving it out for free. Right now it's only on Mac, but it could easily be made on a PC as well. And I can see them doing that because these books could be made on either platform. And but by using this tool, you can then put your book up on the iBook store. And if it's a textbook, it goes in the textbook section. But you don't have to make a textbook. You can make something else. And I can envision people putting out bestiaries for games, you know, with interactive critters in them, or little modules and stuff and everything with interactive maps and such. I can see this thing. And, of course, initially they're going to be in iBooks. Now, I've read, I have to make sure on this, but the tool, I think, also exports to PDF. So you could then distribute your supplement on iBook Store in interactive form, or on something like DriveThruRPG or something like that as PDF.
Yeah, so, that would be awesome.
You know, you've got a free tool now to do a lot of stuff with that some people don't have access to. Big layout programs and you know,
this will make self-publishing a lot easier, I think, and. Yeah, it's somewhat limiting your audience to people who, at the moment, to people who have Apple hardware. But the deal is it has to start somewhere.
Has to start somewhere, yes.
Somebody has to plunk down the money for R&D. They have to actually develop the prototypes. They have to actually develop the software, put it all out there, and see what happens with it.
And they have to go do the groundwork to go out there and talk to the publishers and everything, get people on board to make it work.
Now, here's the deal. If a textbook costs $15 in the iBook format, and it has all this interactivity, and it engages the minds of the children, that's... what, about $35 cheaper than a normal textbook on average?
$40 on average, yeah.
Okay.
And
updates to it are probably going to be free. Because in most cases, most ebooks are updated for free if there's an update.
And even if they're not, these publishers could make subscriptions so you can get yearly updates to your to your books.
Yeah, at a nominal cost.
And the schools would get yearly updates for their books.
Right.
And everything.
And then you don't have to worry about the books being torn up. You don't have to worry about them being lost, not returned.
You don't have to worry about your son or daughter's back being broken by a book bag full of books. Mm-hmm. And everything.
You don't have to worry about the local school bully stealing your books and, you know.
Stealing the iPad, so.
Well, yeah. Hopefully, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how they're going to handle that. Whether the school's going to own the iPads and they're not going to be taking them home. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing.
Well, they have initiatives out there, one-to-one iPad initiatives already mm-hmm. running in schools where they can use the iPad at school. I think they're allowed to take them home, and there's replacement guarantees and things like
now,
that
kind
for
of
the
thing
schools.
That I hadn't considered until just this moment is if they open this up so that it's available on other hardware, you've got that company, and since I just now considered it, I don't have the research right in front of me, mm-hmm. Creating the Raspberry Pi, which is a little credit card-sized computer that's going to be like $25 or $35. Mm-hmm. That it is going to be available for school children. And, I mean, if this becomes available on any kind of hardware format, then, you know, you've got this little $35 credit card-sized computer that these kids can have.
Yeah.
And then all the schools have to provide is a monitor.
Yeah. So the opportunity here is really huge. And like we said, you have to start somewhere, and Apple's starting.
Yeah, so. I mean, instead of people jumping on the let's hate Apple bandwagon, why not jump on the, hey, it's nice to see somebody doing something for education once.
Yeah, and let's try it and then improve on it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So anyway, that's all I have to say about that, though.
Yeah, let's stop there and let the hate begin.
What else we got in our Brave Flakes? We got a cool little marketing gimmick. By a movie.
I love marketing.
Mm-hmm.
I do. A lot of people think that marketing is just a way of trying to trick the consumer. I think it's a way of trying to appeal to the consumer. I want to see more innovative marketing techniques. And this is awesome.
This is Resident Evil 6.
Retribution.
Retribution. It's coming out soon, in April, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer that's come out, though, starts out as a Sony commercial.
Right. It never actually says Sony, but they show Sony phones.
They show Sony phones. They show the Sony PSP Vita.
Right.
They show other Sony equipment and people saying things like...
This is my world.
This is my world. And then it cuts across... Now, this is funny. Mm-hmm. Because all these people over in Europe and Asia... And then it cuts across to the United States... And we're under attack by zombie things from Resident Evil.
Yeah, basically, the rest of the world's all pretty and sonified, and it's like, this is my world, yay! Zip! Imagine the world in the future, the United States, a burning hellhole.
Which I can see.
Yeah,
so, we're headed that way. We're not going to go there because we're not a political
podcast. We're not a political podcast. So just because we're screwed doesn't mean we need to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, luckily, okay. You know, we don't do video. So, you know, we're not going to be running this this video, this trailer on our podcast and possibly get in trouble.
Probably getting in trouble, yeah.
But it's just a cool marketing idea to have a... obvious commercial, but kind of zoom into the trailer.
It is so blended into mm-hmm. the trailer that one article actually called it a subtle commercial for Sony. And it's like, no, it's not subtle.
It's not very subtle.
It's right up front and in your face, but it blends with the actual mm-hmm. trailer for the movie. And it's awesome. I love what they've done here.
Yeah. Now, Resident Evil is put out by Sony Pictures, so obviously there's some cross stuff going on here.
Why wouldn't you promote your own stuff?
Yeah. But it's just a good idea, and if other people can do that rather than just, you know, having a...
Throw a Coke can in your face?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Oops! I mentioned a product. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Expect the website to be shut down any day.
And speaking of... closing down websites and everything. There was that protest a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
The protest of the SOPA, PIPA Act. You can look it all up on the internet. We don't have to go into it here.
Right.
But what I did want to touch on was there's a comic out there called The Oatmeal.
Mm-hmm. Awesome
and
stuff.
And he did an awesome animated GIF.
Which most of you have probably seen.
Most of you have probably seen it, and it has, you know, Oprah and Jesus on a jet ski.
Yes.
And some other things, especially a koala and goat having sex.
And he got it on CNN.
It was shown on several newscasts, and the CNN one especially showed the koala and goat having sex. That's just awesome.
That is so awesome. Congratulations to the oatmeal. All right. We just felt the need to congratulate him for that. Let's go on now.
We do have one science brain flake.
Science!
Today's science brain flake is brought to you by BBC, making people look stupid for ages.
Well, definitely this time.
The BBC was talking about amateur stargazers have apparently found a planet.
Right. And one gentleman in particular
and they used,
that they made look like a real goofball.
They did. This is a video, and we'll put a link to it on our website, and you'll see what we're talking about. Basically, they introduce the guy, and while they're introducing the guy, they have him kind of looking off into space.
Like he's going to spot the planet right then.
Yeah.
Naked eye.
With the naked
eye. Oh, yeah, there it is.
So I think that, you know, he actually was using data, and they were crowdsourcing the data and stuff.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I think it...
But they made him look like he was gazing off into space, looking with the naked eye to see a planet millions of light years away. And it's really funny.
It's kind of cheesy, guys.
Yeah.
A little bit cheesy. But you know what? It's still awesome that an amateur... an amateur found a planet.
The great thing about this guy, though, is that he kind of sounds like... Wallace from Wallace and Gromit.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of expect him, you know, he's sitting there and he's saying, and I didn't really, you know, think about being an astronomer except when I saw the show and then I became an astronomer. And then you expect him to say something like, and I wanted some cheese. So, you know, but he doesn't.
He doesn't. It's sad.
But anyway, we'll put a link to the video. You gotta watch it.
Absolutely.
And it is good news, you know, that they're crowdsourcing data again.
Yeah.
And this is great.
Yep, so one last little political comment. Don't let them kill the internet. Good things are happening.
Yeah, maybe not on this show, but...
No. No, you don't come here for the good stuff.
No.
All right, game pick of the week.
I do have some good stuff for the game pick of the week.
Yes.
It's really good. This is an excellent game.
Yeehaw, I got snake ass.
We played it last week. A two-player version of it. And it actually works pretty well as a two-player game.
It does. You can see a lot of potential for more people.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it works great as a two-player game. I had a lot of fun playing it. I am excited to play it again.
Yeah. So. Game is called Evo.
Mm-hmm.
And Evo has actually been out for a while. This is a reissue of it with new artwork that was put out last year, 2011. Mm-hmm. And this particular edition has basically a different map for each number of players. You can play from 2 to 5 players,
mm-hmm.
and each number of players has a different map. They're like two-sided maps.
And they're on regular game board stock, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's high-quality stuff.
Mm-hmm. The artwork on the game board is excellent. The artwork on the cards is excellent. They changed the artwork throughout the game. The original game had more cartoony artwork, and this has more of a painterly style.
Right.
So it looks awesome. The gameplay itself, it plays sort of like a... kind of like if you've ever played Revolution... In a way, you've got...
There's a certain amount of bidding.
There's some bidding going on. There's some zones of control going on.
Mm-hmm.
You have little counters that count as your dinosaurs. You get evolution points that you use to buy mutations for your dinosaurs, as well as use for the bidding. So you have to be careful what you spend so you can buy other things in the bidding section.
Correct.
And basically, there is an environmental... dial that is affected during the game.
Right. Climate changes drastically.
Yes.
Each turn in the game. And so your dinosaurs may be in nice comfy grassland. And the next turn, nice comfy grassland suddenly is frigid wasteland. And it's too cold for dinosaurs to survive.
So during the movement phase, you have to get them out of there.
Right.
And sometimes
and if you can't, they die.
They die. Unless, of course, you've bought a mutation to let them survive in that particular environment.
Right. So, and you get the mutations through bidding.
Correct.
And if you get outbid for the mutation, well, tough luck.
The object of the game is to survive, of course, and to have the most dinosaurs on the board at the end of the game. The end of the game comes.
The most mutation points.
And the most mutation points. And the end of the game comes when you turn over the disc that represents the meteor striking the Earth.
Right.
I hate meteors. They're always getting in the way.
They're always killing things off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hopefully by then you've got enough mutations and everything to become the dominant species on the planet.
There you go.
Until humans come along and kill your ass.
And we will probably make note, after we've played with multiple people, we'll mention either on the site or on one future podcast. Mm-hmm. Just how much more awesome that is.
Yeah. The pieces are awesome, too. They're like little, I don't think they're wood, but they're kind of like that wooden-like plasticine.
Yeah, resin.
Yeah. But they're nice. They're like, look like little dinosaurs, unless you put them down another way, and they look like weird eels. But otherwise, they're kind of fun to play with. And there are also, like I said, the artwork. One caveat that I have is we had a problem reading the disc.
Right.
The rules and the discs that show the climate changes is a little difficult to figure out at first.
Right. The rules were not that clear on how it worked. We spent a good 10, 15 minutes going over it just to verify in our own minds that we were doing this right.
That we were making sure we were reading which was frigid and which was hot and which was
right. Cool, I mean,
fine to live on.
Once you figure it out, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. But they could be a little more clear on that.
The rules could be much clearer on that. But other than that,
fun game.
Fun game.
Definitely. We think it's fun for two people. I actually read a few reviews on the internet that they didn't seem to like the two-player version.
No, I had a good time.
But we'll be able to judge that. We're going to get some more friends over. Mm-hmm. Do we have friends?
We have a couple.
Okay. And we'll get some of them over if they want to come after, you know, we take a shower. And we'll see about getting some more players in the game and see how it compares to a two-player game. Maybe it's even more fun with more people.
Right, so, absolutely.
Evo, pick it up. And if you can't pick it up at your friendly local game store, we'll have a link on our website where you can buy it.
As always.
And,
all right.
Everything. So, on to the feature.
On to the feature. And
are we going to mention the game?
Yeah, we're going to mention it.
Okay.
What
happened on January 9th?
They announced that they are going to be doing a new edition of D&D.
D&D 5th edition.
And the internet erupted.
Oh boy, did it erupt. Like a zit on a teenager from hell.
Yep.
Yeah. So, maybe I shouldn't have used that as a...
Yeah, probably not. But anyway. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So. It's amazing because, I mean, for the most part, people were going along and they're a nice little D&D world. And then all of a sudden they announced the next edition and rage poured out.
Now, it's interesting to me that there's like this much. Now, there's a lot of good stuff out there, too. A lot of wondering, bewilderment. There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of rage. And it's kind of amazing to me that there's this much talk going on because everybody knew Monty Cook had been hired back a while ago.
Right. Right.
You know.
So everybody suspected. It's been rumored for a long time that there was a fifth edition. It's not going to be called fifth edition. Right now they're hashtagging it as D&D Next.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what the official name is.
But yeah, it's got Monty Cook, Mike Merles, a whole bunch of people that have been involved with D&D from third edition at least. Maybe
right.
Second edition.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason that they've got all these people involved is because they said that they're going to somehow bring everybody together that's ever played D&D. Everybody who's ever played D&D.
All the way from Chainmail, Blackmoor.
On up to 4th edition. It's going to be able to sit down at the table and peace and love and happiness and play D&D.
Now, they clarified just the other day, yesterday I think it was.
I think they needed a clarification on
that doesn't mean that someone with a first edition character is going to sit down at the table with a person with a fourth edition character, and they're going to be able to play with their own little rule sets.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not going to happen. But somehow they're intending to make it possible for somebody who's coming from a fourth edition background of D&D and a first edition background to sit down at a table and play together using rules that seem familiar to both.
Yeah. And if they succeed in this, hopefully it'll bring an end to the majority of the edition wars.
I don't see it, but...
I hope. You know, I always have hope. I really do. Now, usually... A lot of times I'm, you know, slapped in the face, but I still have hope anyway because I'm stupid, I guess.
Okay, you want to know what's really flipped my wig on this whole thing?
Oh,
so the thing that
flipped your wig?
Yeah, yeah. And
oh dear,
other old timey sayings.
Get me to the fainting couch.
The thing that's really gotten me going nuts on this is. And I don't know where this came from, is the third edition hate.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem, now, some people I've read said they didn't see it, but a couple people I've read said they did, and I've noticed it mainly by going to the blogs and the sites of the people who are working on the project and then reading the comments after that.
Yeah.
There is a lot of third edition hate out there, and... Yeah. Some of the people have always hated third edition, but there seems to be a lot of people coming out of the woodwork and just claiming that they hate it now, or they just didn't
maybe
speak
they
up
do.
Before.
Maybe they really do hate it. I never saw the hate. I don't know where it came from.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is because it's okay to hate now. Let your hate out.
Yeah, the internet's a place for hate.
Yeah. Some of them have good comments on why they hate it, and some of them I think.
Well, see,
are just...
I have no problem with people who can actually list their reasons and their reasoned arguments for, you know, the things that they don't like. Yeah. That's fine. Please be willing to do that. But the people who are just like, oh, third edition was the sucksor. Everybody who played it is, you know, a jerkwad and old. Yeah. Like, get over it, small child.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, some people out there are saying, oh, if you play 4th edition, then you've never actually played D&D. You know, if you played 1st edition, then I don't know what the hell you were playing, but it's not Dungeons & Dragons. And it's like, no, that's not right.
Yeah.
It's all Dungeons & Dragons. It's all versions that we've all learned, you know.
We've all learned, yeah.
I started with the red box in the very beginning, you know. We even... got into a little bit, we stepped backwards a little bit into the chainmail thing a little bit. But we've been through all the editions.
Yeah, yeah.
And each change is a little hard to swallow sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But
each change
brings
something.
Each change has some very positive things.
Yeah, each change brings something to it. I mean, with second edition, you had the introduction of Thaco. I mean the math. I mean being able to basically do the math and figure out what your hit roll was instead of consulting a book full of charts, different chart for each character type. That was just amazingly.
That was mind blowing. Yeah,
you know, personally for third edition, a lot of people don't like them. I love the feats and the prestige classes.
So do I.
I thought that they brought differences to characters and classes that people could play with and toy with. You could design your own prestige class.
Thought it added a lot of depth.
Yeah. And for people, you know, for a D&D type game where the goal to me in D&D, not like in a classless game, the goal in a D&D game is to kind of pick a type and see if you can role play it. See if you can make the story out of it, you know, and that to me is what D&D is about, and I think third edition and more 3.5 edition actually did a pretty good job on that with the, you know, with the prestige classes and everything. Were there things broken? Yeah, Sonics has always been broken. Sonics is hell.
Yeah,
you know,
fourth edition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I like the idea of the power cards and stuff for the simple fact that you had these cards in front of you that told you, okay, you can use this one at will.
Mm-hmm.
This is a daily power. This one, you know,
yeah,
so on and so forth. This is a utility power. I like that. Yeah. It made things simple. You had it in front of you. You knew what you had, what you could use. You didn't have to go searching through your character sheet to figure out what you had.
Yeah.
I like the introduction of the minions, the little one-hit creatures, you know. You hit them, they're dead.
Yeah.
So that you can flood an area with creatures that makes it feel overwhelming. And when they're all defeated, you feel like you've done something epic.
Mm-hmm.
Because your little four-man group just took out 35 enemies, you know. Mm-hmm. Two of which were a real threat. The rest of them were all like little theater one-hit dressing. Wonders. Yeah.
But, and, you know, but theater dressing works for epic games.
It makes it feel epic. So it's great, you know. Yeah. We used to do that anyway.
Yeah, we did that anyway in second edition, but especially.
It's like a house rule kind of thing, which has now become canon. You know, yeah. It's
one thing I liked in fourth edition. I really do like the movement rules and everything for miniatures. Mm-hmm. I think before, when you use miniatures, it was kind of a representation of everything that you're doing, and now you actually have some rules for movement, and you have rules on abilities where you can move other people and do tactical stuff with your characters.
Quite honestly, up through second edition, at least, if you wanted miniature rules, you had to go all the way back to chainmail.
Yeah. But this, you know, I do like them. Now, I also happen to think, though, they get in the way of the story. And, you know, to me. Mm-hmm. So that is a, you know, I think that's a plus. I think there's a minus to it.
You have to find a balance in there.
You do have to find a balance and everything. But you got to find the right kind of balance.
Right.
Because balancing movement rules with a story rules and everything is a little different than the balance I think a lot of other people talk about, which is character balance.
Yeah, I was going to say, this brings us into our final point on this.
Final point.
Character balance.
Character balance, we don't believe in it whatsoever.
Yeah. Now, there are people out there who argue for it, and I'm really not sure what they're looking for in a game. But character balance, especially in a pen and paper role-playing game, it really has no place.
No.
I don't want my fighter being exactly the same as my mage.
No.
I want them to be two different types of creatures. I like the fact that in the beginning, my mage is dancing his way out of danger. He's
whippy, whippy, whippy.
Oh, he is struggling so hard. And if he survives these lower levels, He becomes a badass.
He gets some awesome sauce at, you know, 8th, 9th level spells and 3rd and 4th.
And the fighter, it's not that the fighter can't take a mage out, but he probably needs some friends to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Honestly,
that's kind of the point.
Look at Sauron. Look at, look at Tim the Enchanter.
Right.
You know? Look at any awesome mage in a fantasy book or fantasy film, and it takes a party to take him down.
Yeah, I mean, you know? Obviously, if he's a little beginner guy, then you can sneeze too hard and he's dead.
Yeah.
But the truly the elderly, the ancient mage should be epic.
Yeah, and most of the time, if you get in to these people's faces, if you can get past their defenses, they're dead meat. Because
right.
They're weak.
Right.
So that's the goal.
They're cloth wearers. They are soft.
That's the goal. The other goal when you're a mage is when you get really powerful. By that time, hopefully you've got a lot of powerful friends around you to kind of protect you as you're blasting things far away. That's part of the game. And you miss that when everybody can pretty much do the same +2 damage with whatever thing they picked.
See, the balance comes from not having each individual character be balanced against each other. The balance comes from putting the right group together.
Yeah.
To face the enemy.
And the challenge comes if you don't happen to have that particular character in that game, how do you get around it?
Okay. One of the worst things out of 4th edition. Now, we've been trying to be positive about everything, but one of the worst things I will say about 4th edition, in case Wizards of the Coast is listening, is healing surges. Now,
I'm not a fan. I
understand that you want, like, that fighter to be able to do that cinematic thing where he's beat down, but then suddenly has a resurgence of energy and goes and fight, whatever. Okay, I understand that you want to be able to do that, but what you've done is you've taken the cleric out of the party.
Yeah.
Okay. Used to be, if you had a party without a cleric,
it was dangerous.
It was dangerous.
But you could do it.
You could,
if you were good.
You could do it if you thought about what you were doing, if you were able to get the right potions, if
wands.
Yeah, and you could do it.
Yeah. Now, an argument.
But it was a big challenge.
Now, an argument that I've heard against that is that, well, then you're just whipping up magic items and stuff and everything. But if you're playing a low magic setting, it's very difficult to get a hold of those potions and those wands. You've got to plan things out if you don't take a cleric with you.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the cleric, the guy playing the cleric or the girl playing the cleric, has to figure out how they're going to play their character so they're not just a heal bot. That was part of the challenge too.
Right.
Anybody who played a cleric as just a heal bot wasn't playing the cleric right.
Absolutely not.
So
absolutely not.
Healing surges to us should be taken out of 5th edition. My personal idea is to make them like a talent or a feat or whatever they bring in. And you can pick a healing surge feat if you want. So you get that ability.
That's awesome. That would
but
be awesome.
But not everybody has it. And right. That would be cool, I think, because mm-hmm. It differentiates people.
People can customize their character. This is the kind of character who can draw on that energy well.
Mm-hmm.
To get that resurgence at the last moment, yeah. Or he's the type of character who hopes he has friends with healing abilities.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, so that's our take. And
I mean, we could sit here all night and tell you about
other ideas.
Other
some
ideas.
Of them be stupid, and some of them might be pretty cool, and that one may be stupid. I don't know.
Yeah, and we could give you all kinds of examples from our 35, 36 years of playing
Holy
these
crap.
Games.
Has yeah. it been that long?
Yeah, it's been that long, dude.
Oh, man.
And
man, my knee hurts. You know, I used to play D&D.
Ah, don't. Just don't.
Anyway, yeah. So we might revisit some of this later, but
we're probably not going to go in depth into this again unless there's some major announcements.
Exactly, because we try to focus more on board games.
If you do want to talk about the D&D stuff, let us know. We will be more than happy to write some stuff up on it, start up a hangout, talk to you guys about it.
Yeah, we want to try some hangouts. Like we said, we have faces made for radio. So
yeah, so be prepared.
Be prepared. You might want to wear a mask or sunglasses.
Tell us that we need to.
We
won't be offended. We understand.
Paper sacks, something like that. But otherwise, yeah, we probably won't cover D&D too much and everything.
Yeah, I mean, we might go into some other role-playing games in the future if there's something interesting about them. But we like to try and stick to board games and tabletop
and general,
games and that sort of
general
thing.
Fun.
And general fun stuff, yeah. And this one can get really serious, so.
Yeah.
We'll revisit it when necessary.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I want to thank again, our 16 followers on Google Plus for listening to the podcast.
If you're listening. Yeah, you are awesome.
Definitely thank you for following us.
Mm-hmm.
Leave comments.
Please do. We really would like to know what we're doing is appealing or not.
Yeah. What do you like? What don't you like? And do you really want to see us?
Yeah. Scary thought. Oh,
scary.
All right.
Until next time, and hopefully it's next week. We're trying to get back on track.
Keep rolling those dice.
Keep rolling the dice, man. No, man.
Trying to kill me.